Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10-31-17.
Bledsoe hanging on to the ball. 10 seconds on the shot clock. Bledsoe out between the circles. He's going to put up a three. Shazam! Eric Bledsoe hits the trio with a minute 14 remaining. And the Suns 96, Dallas 93.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Jazz for the 31st of May. Detroit wants to move the 12th pick. Could the Jazz get involved in that? Bucks GM search, Steve Kerr's situation, NBA Finals talk, and we go on a search for a point guard with Locked On Suns, Kellen Olson, on the Eric Bledsoe case. Next on Locked On Jazz. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great today. Glad to have you aboard. Yesterday's show, Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat talked Goran Dragic possibilities. We kind of came up with nothing. Today, we'll do the same with Kellen Olson of Locked On Suns to see if we can find a point guard in Eric Bledsoe. That one actually gets pretty detailed. He starts with a proposal. We talk about different possibilities. We even get into names and a trade. That's all coming up on the program today. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. If you are looking to head to a ball game this summer, a concert, or an event, make sure you do it with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app right now onto your phone. Go to the settings tab. Enter in LO Jazz. You'll get $20 back on your first purchase. Why SeatGeek? Well, first off, they compile all of the tickets to all of the from all the different places in one place for you, so you don't have to go to multiple sites. Secondarily, they give a ticket score on each of those seats, so you know which are the best valued seat out there. It could be to anything you might want to go to, whether it's an event, you know, you're traveling into a city, you're going to be heading to a Major League Baseball city at some point and want to go to a game, a concert, you want to see Katy Perry, Lady Gaga in Salt Lake City, whatever it might be. As I think I've mentioned before, we're kind of on the constant Hamilton ticket price search. Right now, Chicago's got the best prices for a Hamilton event. There aren't many that are very good. In fact, the April shows coming up in Eccles are like at $800 still right now. Kind of crazy. So we keep monitoring the prices to see and have price alerts set. So do it now. Download the SeatGeek app and enter in the promo code under settings tab, LOJAZZ, and you'll get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. All right, let's run through some of the news and notes of the NBA, and then Kellen Olson will join us. NBA Finals is coming up. We haven't done a lot of analysis of it yet. I think there's some interesting things, though, when you look at these two teams that I think are getting maybe not talked about quite enough. So when you look at the Warriors, and we know them pretty well, they're the number one shooting team in the restricted area of any team in the league. They take the seventh. They don't take a huge amount of shots there, right? They take 20. They're 24th in the league in shots in the paint, but they're the one of the best. They're the number one shooting team in the paint. That, I think, is all everyone talks about, the jump shooting, everything else. That's a little untalked about. The Cavaliers are the second best team shooting in the restricted area. They're not very good in the paint, non-restricted area. They're the third best team in the paint. They're 29th in the league in taking shots in the paint. So what's interesting about both these teams is when they do get to the paint, whether it's running, whether it's penetration, they're very, very solid at it. But when you talk about, when people talk about, well, you can't win the title as a jump shooting team, the Cavaliers actually play outside of the paint more than the Warriors do. The Cavaliers are 21st in the league in mid-range shots, and the The Warriors are 20th. So it's virtually the same. They both take 20% of their field goal attempts as mid-range shots. The Cavaliers take 40% of their shots in the paint. The Warriors take a bit more than that. They take 44% of their shots in the paint. And then they both fire the three at an incredibly high rate. The Cavaliers take 40% of their shots as threes, second most of any team in the NBA. The Warriors, for all the talk, are taking the sixth most amount of shots as threes, 36%. Both take the same amount of corner threes, 7.7%. And then the Cavaliers take the second most amount of above the break, or excuse me, a percentage of their shots is, sorry, they're both the same there. And then on the above the break three, they both shoot about the same amount. So that's, you know, when you look at these two teams, their shot selection, their model of offense is actually very, very similar. When they get to the rim in the restricted area, they're the two best teams in the league. They do it rarely, and they shoot the same amount of threes, Cavaliers shoot a few more corner threes. Warriors are the number one mid-range shooting team in the league. Cavaliers are the seventh best. Warriors are the sixth best corner three shooting team in the league. Cavaliers are the fourth best. Cavaliers had 42% of their corner threes. Above the break three, Cavaliers are the fifth best team, and above the break three, and the Warriors are the second best. So offensively, you know, there isn't actually a huge, it's interesting. Now, defensively is where things change a little bit. The Warriors are the ninth best team in the league defending the restricted area. The Cavaliers are 20th. The Warriors are the number one team in the league defending in the paint non-restricted, which is the same area where the Cavaliers are not a very good shooting team. Then when it gets to the corner three, the Cavs are the sixth best team in the league defending the corner three. And the Warriors are the third best team. That's just defending the actual shot. We'll get into how much they allow in a minute. The Cavaliers, though, are not good at defending the above the break three for the season. And the Warriors are the number one team in the NBA defending the above the break three. That, to me, is the early thing to watch in the series. Above the break threes. Are the Warriors getting above the break three looks that are good? And if so, it's a sign that the Cavaliers' defense that was not great during the regular season is continuing to not be that solid. A few other defensive notes about these two teams. The Cavaliers do the 10th best team in the league at keeping you out of the restricted area shooting, and the Warriors are not. The Warriors actually are 20th, so if the Cavaliers can go, it's a lot of offensive rebounding and things of that nature. That's where you're going to get that from the Cavaliers, against the Cavaliers. Defensively, percentage of three-point shots allowed, Cavaliers are 8th in the league, Warriors are 14th. The Warriors are the third-best team in the league at denying the corner three, and the third-best team in the league, and the Cavaliers are 22nd. So there's an area where if the Warriors are moving it and getting corner threes, that should open up your eyes. So that's just a few thoughts for you on kind of the shot distribution, the offensive defense, on how these two teams will look at things coming into this finals matchup that starts on Thursday. We'll dig in a bit more on it tomorrow. A few other NBA news notes. Bucks GM search is going on. Justin Zanuck left the Jazz. Everyone's understanding was largely that he was going to be the next GM. It still might be possible, but they are certainly going through now an extensive search, which is a little bit surprising. It's not entirely the way it felt that, though, that was going to play out for Justin. Hopefully this is not bad news for him, but he is acting GM right now for Milwaukee. Story out of Detroit that they might be willing to move the 12th pick. That gets interesting on two levels. So one is, what would they want? They want an established player. They have a real tough circumstance because both Andre Drummond and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope are up to get paid. What would make them be willing to trade the Jazz the 12th pick? An interesting note on it. I don't know if this would happen. And I'm not saying this is something I propose, but I'm just throwing it out there so you can kind of consider it and think about it. So would Detroit take Rodney Hood because it slows down their timetable, gives them another year? They could do an extension with him in the offseason, or they could wait till he goes to restricted free agency the next year. Because it gives him and he and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope are stunningly similar players statistically. And then they don't have to pay Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They can work with Rodney Hood, see if Rodney Hood, if they think Hood's better than Pope, then they could then sign. They have a year delayed on the money game there. And would that be enough for them to trade the 12th pick? Would the Jazz be willing to trade Rodney Hood for the 12th pick before you know whether Gordon Hayward's coming back? I mean, talk about a big-time gamble there from the Jazz. Woo! I mean, that's where these things get tricky. And we get into this as well with Kellen Olson. The implication in the conversation is obviously that if the Jazz were able to acquire a point guard, you feel more comfortable about re-signing Gordon. But we get into some trade possibilities in this upcoming conversation that are a little hard to swallow. I'll be interested in your thoughts on these. That's a thought there on this draft. There's a lot of players floating around in some weird spots who might be able to move, who might slip. There's some funky things. I'm looking at mock drafts. Charlotte's got Zach Collins at 11. Gosh, isn't he awfully similar to Frank Kaminsky? There just seems to be a lot of players who've been in similar circumstances for a while, or teams. And so they have a lot of these players, and it'll be curious to see what happens. All right, so that is the take on Locked On Jazz. Now let's move to our feature of searching for a point guard. We do it with the Phoenix Locked On Suns host, Kellen Olson. Remember, today's show brought to you by SeatGeek, promo code LOJAZZ. We check in with Locked On Suns. Kellen Olson is the host of Locked On Suns, along with former NBA player Eddie House. Really good NBA show. But we start with the Jazz quest for a point guard number two, and that of Eric Bledsoe. So before we delve into whether the Jazz can acquire Eric Bledsoe, Kellen, I need an understanding of who Eric Bledsoe as a player is at this point.
So it's funny. You had me on the Locked On NBA show, as you did with every other Locked On podcast, NBA podcast. I kind of talked about he's kind of been underrated because in the two seasons where he's put up really good numbers, he's had those season-ending knee injuries. That was in the 2013-14 season, of course, when the team won 48 games with Goran Dragic, and then, of course, two seasons ago. But this season, he kind of put up those numbers. He had a career year. He averaged 21 points a game, 6 assists a game, and really had this fascinating sort of January where the team was kind of pushing for some winning basketball for the first time in a while, and it was really behind him. He averaged 24 points and 8 assists a game. Really just a overwhelming physical point guard that really likes to get to the rim. Used to be a really good defender back a couple years ago, but the knee surgeries and kind of a decrease in effort on the defensive end really hurt him. But there are some optimists here who believe that if he was to have a change of scenery to, say, Utah, for example, that we would get sort of that defensive player we saw in the past. So really a two-way point guard, most see him as, and really just a guy who can really get to the basket and has really been one of the most underrated players in the league for the past couple of years now. Just need to stay healthy, and he finally did.
All right, so he has not been on a winning team, but you still believe he's a really good player. You sound very high on who he is as a player.
Yeah, he is without a doubt the best player on the Suns by a considerable margin, and I believe that is the conundrum really with the team, is that they have to decide whether they want to complete the rebuild, blow it up, and trade Bledsoe right now when his value is arguably the highest, or they keep him just because simply he's the team's best player.
Is he a point guard or is he 6'1"?
I like that question a lot. Man, it's tough because a lot of people believe that he has some combo guard tendencies, and it's definitely there, but I believe that he is a point guard. He has shown the ability to really run an offense and really run a team. And that's something he's gotten better at in the past 2 years, in my opinion. So a team like like Utah, for example, was nervous about him becoming their team's point guard, I'd feel fine about it.
Does he make his teammates better?
That's a good question as well. I feel like he impacts the game in a way where he's one of the best finishers at the rim in terms of guards. He has been for the past 3 or 4 years now, and that's where he makes his teammates better. He would really open the floor. So you're looking at a combination with him and Gobert, for example, Hayward and all the shooters that they have around there. Hayward in terms of like him handling the ball, of course, but in terms of the shooters off the ball, he would make the team better in that way and kind of provide his spacing. But in terms of a pure playmaker providing for others, I'm not so sure in that specific way.
All right, so let's go back to the health issue for a second. He's 27, which on one level makes him appealing. He only plays 66 games. Did they shut him down because he was part of the tank, or did they shut him down because he's hurt? And how healthy a player is this who is on the books for 14.5 next year and 15 the year after?
General Manager Ryan McDonough cited that they had some advanced sports science data that suggested that he was having more wear and tear on his body. And during that month of January I mentioned where he was playing lights out basketball, he was only averaging 36 minutes a game. There were some instances such as at New York, he played 39 minutes. And then the night after in Toronto, he played 42 minutes. So on back-to-backs, he was playing 40 minutes sometimes. And Suns fans and people following the team were kind of curious as to what Watson was doing. Playoffs were way out of the picture by then. So he had some questionable minute totals, and maybe that was why they shut him down. But the team went 2-13 during this run. They had shut down Brandon Knight and Tyson Chandler earlier, and that wasn't even a shutdown. They just benched them for the rest of the season, really, in a clear tanking effort. They did lose a lot of games. Of course, it didn't pay off in the lottery, but it was more of a tanking effort. Bledsoe seemed disappointed. The team seemed like they were in a position, and Bledsoe specifically, where he could have played out the rest of the year. We weren't really seeing too much wear and tear on him in those last five games or so that he played. I thought just some nights he had it, some nights he didn't, like anyone else. I didn't really see much to be worried about in terms of the injuries, but once again, you wanted to see him play those full 82, certainly, if you want to trade for him and pay him that money, like you said.
All right, now let's get into the trade aspects of it. Do you think Phoenix is willing to move Eric Bledsoe?
Yes, I believe that for the right price, Ryan McDonough will make a deal. He has always shown the willingness to make a deal if it's the right one, and he's active. He's always been active, and this just makes a lot of sense with where the team's core is at right now. Your boy, Dragan Bender, Marquese Chriss, Devin Booker, TJ Warren. They've got a couple of promising bench players also who are young. Alan Williams, Tyler Ulis, Derek Jones Jr., they're really looking to develop. They have so many young pieces right now, and Bledsoe is 27, and by the time these guys are hitting their mid-20s, Devin Booker starting to enter his prime, Bledsoe's going to be 31, 30, 32 on bad knees, and they're going to have to decide whether or not they want to give him a fresh contract or not. So I think the situation is really fitting for the Suns to want to deal him, but I also think they need the right deal in order to make the commitment. And I'm not sure it fits in Utah, unfortunately.
All right, so this is where the draft did not work well for you because you wanted the first or second pick so you could just have a point guard. Maybe the greatest asset the Jazz could give the Suns would be some sort of draft pick, as well as much as the Jazz probably don't want to, Boris Diaw's contract expires. So with the Jazz cap situation, if this deal were to be made prior to the draft, the Jazz could absorb Eric Bledsoe into some cap space and give a pick and clear, and then the Suns would take back no money. Do the Suns have interest in cap space to try to be a player in the free agent market?
I don't really think so, no. I think you described it perfectly there in the beginning, is that if the team would have landed one or two in the draft lottery and they're looking at Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz, it's much easier to make a trade like this that not only the team has shown with like PJ Tucker and other players in the past that they are willing to put players in better situations. Now they're going to wait for the right trade to come across, of course, but they're still looking for the right sort of situation for the player. And that's a great situation for Eric Bledsoe to go win 50, 55 games with the Utah Jazz. But the bottom line is at pick number four, you're looking at guys like De'Aaron Fox, Dennis Smith Jr. These are guys that are risky picks in the top five. And risk, what I mean by that is trading your best player who just came off the best season of his career and is pretty much in his prime right now, and trading him for whatever that is, a late first-round pick and an expiring contract. And Phoenix has always tried to be players in the free agent market, but in a situation like this, where they were to trade Bledsoe, I could not see them really being aggressive in the free agent market. I could see that if they still had Bledsoe as their core piece, but with the young guys, I couldn't really see that being much of a factor for them.
So if you go, if you're Ryan McDonough, what are you asking from the Jazz for Eric Bledsoe?
I think the team, where does the team stand on Dante Exum? Because I think he is the type of piece that they would be looking for. I'm not sure where I would rate Exum off the top of my head in terms of the point guards in this class, but they would need that sort of assurance as a piece going forward at point guard. Is he someone that's kind of untouchable in a deal like this where Bledsoe's only on a contract for another 2 years?
So Dante Exum for Eric Bledsoe? What else are you giving us?
What else are you giving us? Okay, I like that response right there. He's pretty much the guy you're looking
to. It's a former fifth pick.
To bring in that.
Fifth pick of the draft who made nice strides in year two. He's off the ACL. He fits perfectly because you wouldn't have a point guard, but you know we're giving you a top five pick. So what else are the Suns giving us?
I don't think the Suns would be in a position where they would want to give up more than Eric Bledsoe in that situation, for sure. I think Bledsoe's price right now is pretty steady. It's either a very valuable first-round pick somewhere in the lottery, probably in the later lottery as opposed to like the top. So we're talking about Exum being a former top five pick. That's probably a little bit too valuable for his price. But you're looking at a pick at really in like the 7 to 12 range in the first round, or just two future first-round picks, something like that. But once again, it's a lot more difficult with where they landed in the draft. And once again, they're just in a situation right now where they're probably just content keeping Eric Bledsoe and getting better with him and then handing off the keys of the franchise and really the team to Devin Booker once Bledsoe's contract expires.
It's interesting. The Jazz could do – the Dante Exum Eric Bledsoe trade works, by the way, just to let you know.
Oh, works straight up? That's fascinating. Wow.
It's interesting. And here's what – here's
part
the,
about it.
Here's the one side that gets interesting from the Jazz standpoint is Bledsoe comes in at a fixed cost and Exum at 27 years old, and Exum is up for an extension coming up in the offseason that I don't know how the Jazz are going to be able to give him. I can't imagine they're going to be able to come to a deal. And so then he's a restricted free agent at the end of the 18-19 season.
Yeah.
No, he's a restricted free agent at the end of the 17-18 season.
Yeah, he's got one more year left and then a restricted free agency. Yeah. Do you think he's kind of in a situation like Alex Len where people don't really know what his value is going to be if he has another season like the past two?
It's an interesting – it would be a heck of a win-now move the Jazz needing to re-sign Gordon Hayward. It's not the craziest thing I've ever heard, I got to tell you.
hey, that's better than nothing.
No, I mean, it's really interesting because on the surface, I would hate it if the Jazz gave up on Dante Exum. On the other hand, the Jazz need a point guard prior to July 1. And
yeah,
is really, that's the biggest thing to me is that they, and Bledsoe with a fixed cost for 2 years gets to be an interesting aspect there, because I mean it's, and I'm trying to wonder if I could throw it into a spreadsheet quickly. And it's a good, and he's a good number, like $15 million for a starting point guard. It's cheap when your other choice is George Hill at 30.
Yeah, people have been throwing around names like Reggie Jackson in trades, for example, and it's just like Bledsoe on his contract right now. He's a valuable asset when guys like George Hill. Drew Holiday's probably going to get way more than Bledsoe is on the market right now, and it's a toss-up between those two players. I don't want to sound like the homer seeing more Bledsoe than Holiday and such, but the bottom line is Bledsoe's on a good deal. For the player that he is, even if you think that he is worse than I'm suggesting, he's still on a good deal.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If you sign Eric Bledsoe, if you trade for Eric Bledsoe at $14.5 million, sign Gordon at $30 million, you haven't moved Derek, you don't move Joe Johnson, you haven't moved Alec Burks. I might make you take Alec Burks' contract in this deal, by the way. I wonder if that
works.
I think
we're in a position where we can do that.
I wonder if I would. But even just stay with where I was for a second. The Jazz salary would be at $111 million, some cap holds, but it might give them the capability of signing Joe Ingles and not going over the luxury tax. All right. By the way, if the Jazz, would you take Alec Burks and Dante Exum for Eric Bledsoe?
You know what? I talked you into it. You were opposed to the deal when I proposed it initially. But now that we've had time to sit with it, and initially I kind of thought that's where we were going to start, honestly. And my read on Dante Exum is worse than yours, David, but I'd have to say no. I think the team needs to keep Bledsoe, and it's a seven-year playoff drought here in Phoenix. Ryan McDonough's on the final year.
You're not being – let's be honest. Ryan, I know you're trying to keep your job and all, but you're not making the playoffs and with your roster.
Yeah, we're not, but we need to. We can't have these 20, 25 win teams again. Hey, if we do this deal, we're going to win less than 25 games again.
Yeah, you got a chance of hitting with Dante Exum, though.
Hey, we do. We could get Luka Doncic in the draft too. Who knows?
It's an interesting. That's an interesting one right there, though. By the way, because the Alec Burks contract then frees the Jazz. Then the Jazz salary number. Is at $100 million with the luxury tax at $121 million, and they can suddenly re-sign Joe Ingles and do some things and stay under the luxury tax. And you have Bledsoe at $14.5 million and $15 million, but you've lost Dante Exum. I mean, that's a painful way to do it. Oh, and actually, even if you've moved Dante Exum, you even have even more money. It's interesting.
It really depends on your read on Exum, and like I said, I have a worse read than you do, but man, it sounds like he's tough to let go, especially with all the battles he's gone through playing time, through the injuries. This is finally maybe going to be the year you see what he's about, and then you move him. That would be something.
Well, Kellen, been good exercise. We're interested to see if it ever takes place. And thanks for the time.
Hey, no problem. Anytime.
So what would you do if you were the Suns or the Jazz in this circumstance? Interesting conversation with Kellen. Jazz searching for a point guard on Locked On Jazz. And I guess we're 0-2 right now. What would have you been willing to do in those conversations and those deals? This is Locked On Jazz, part of Locked On Podcast Network.